Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So, Kelly, the Gun Boys, the Gun Brothers, Colton and Austin, are the AEW Tag Team Champions. Are you surprised? And is it a good traditional wrestling move to have heels upset via cheating a popular babyface tag team to set up a pay-per-view rematch where the babyfaces regain the belts? Or are the Guns too much of a joke, not credible enough, too mid-card, whatever, and it actually kind of ultimately hurts the prestige of the tag titles, or some third option?
3 hours ago, I would have been surprised. An hour ago, when Excalibur announced that this was the main event, I realized that this title change was happening, because this match only goes on after the Elite for one reason. So so when that was announced, that is what I felt was almost inevitable. These guys did languish without even getting real TV time for quite a while, but they kind of, I don't know, I think they kind of got away with this with the story, but they're definitely going for shock value with people. They showed a lot of absolutely stunned fans, just crazy ending to this story here. We were at Full Gear, and we saw Max Caster's rap show afterwards, and Austin Gunn performed at that rap show, and he kind of upstaged Max Caster. I think that's where the real issue is in this story. But I don't know. I think I like what they did here with the heels winning in this fashion, but I will be very interested to see if people are willing to accept these guys who lost so much to everyone for so long, being champions under any circumstances.
Yeah, does it even matter if the Guns have credibility, if the fans are entertained by the shock and dismay of them holding the tag titles, and perhaps also just being offended by a team at their level holding the belts? And in modern wrestling, AEW can tell stories in a lot of different ways, but they don't have to tell the story that the best tag team is the are the champions. They can tell a different story and sell people on the idea of the Acclaimed getting the belts back. There's pros and cons to that, but I think some people are going to think, oh, this is a disgrace. And in a way, that's, I think, what Tony Khan wants you to feel. So that cheer even louder and root even harder for, in a meta sense, the booking to give the belts back to somebody who deserves it, or in a, I'm wrapped up in the storyline, the Acclaimed to get revenge on them. Your thoughts on that.
I actually love this as a wrestling move. And I think it's all the better that this is such a well-respected tag division. I think that makes it even better that these bottom feeders cheated their way to the championship. And I think, I don't know if you can get 6 months out of them as champions, but I think they can make good transitional champions and can cheat to win a few more matches. So, I really like that they did this, and they did this to such a hot act. I mean, everyone does seem to love the Acclaimed, and I certainly do. And I've liked the act, and they're always whenever I drop in, they're one of my favorite parts of the show. I thought they got away with this hugely, and part of that is because of how respected this division is. And I just don't think there are any sacred cows in wrestling. And if it was a meritocracy, then it wouldn't be professional wrestling. I like this move.
What'd you think of the tease of Billy Gunn choosing his sons, siding with his sons? And they played into that. You know, Anthony Bowens earlier in the show was not happy that Billy chose to stay in the back. And then, of course, when Billy comes out, he's helping Anthony Bowens up. And you're thinking, he's not helping him up. He's going to hold him for his sons to knock him out with the tag belt. And instead, he didn't turn on the Acclaimed. He didn't reunite with his sons. Colton hit him with the title belt. And the story just seems like, hey, we made it seem like we were forecasting something that afterwards you would say was so obvious, it's insulting. And then they just didn't do it. And they, in a sense, outsmarted the fans thinking that they could see this coming from a mile away.
I thought that was a very effective red herring, in part because the tease made you think, oh my gosh, they're going to cheat to win the championships using their dad. And then dad shows up. He doesn't help them cheat to win the championships. And so you say that was the red herring. And then they win them anyway. It worked on me because in that moment, there were so many different ways that could go. He helps them up for real, but the shot hits him anyway. He helps him up and then takes the shot himself. Lots of different ways that that story could have played out. I thought it was an effective red herring in the moment.
Yeah, and I thought it was well done. You know, I think it's fine for wrestling companies to fool the fans if they don't fool them just for the sake of haha gotcha. And I think this served a purpose of adding drama, making it seem like you knew it was coming, and then changing course and sticking kind of with what was working. I would not have been happy if, you know, Billy, if Colton didn't hit Billy and they ended up having Billy turn anyway, when, you know, like after he had already helped Bowens get out of the way of the belt shot, you know, that's like a double swerve where it doesn't make sense. The first swerve doesn't make sense. And then you're just doing it just to, you know, whatever. That's just, that's illogical, and they didn't do it. So I applaud them for that. And I thought this worked. I am going to be fine with the Acclaimed finally moving on from feuding with the Guns. I assume that will happen after the pay-per-view and they'll be tag champs again, but maybe not. I don't think there's obvious teams in the mix right now, especially with the Bucks and Kenny wrapped up in the Trios division and other top teams in threesomes in that division. There's just not as much depth, including with FTR on hiatus, so to speak. So, this is fine. I mean, it's weird to say, but there's so many titles in AEW that they can actually treat different championships in different ways and have different kinds of storylines and different kinds of champions to tell different kinds of stories. I think, and you know, it sounds like this is almost like the positive side of AEW watering down their championships with so many belt holders, but it takes on less significance to have what fans will perceive as sort of a joke of a tag team, an undeserving tag team, as champs, just because it's not one of only like three titles in the company.
Yeah, at the outset of the show, they said, we've got four matches with championship implications. And I go, yeah, well, how rare is that? I mean, on
yes,
this show,
I know.
Certainly that happens a lot. So, yes, indeed, you kind of get away with it with doing something like this. And, I suppose I don't see any other obvious challengers right now. So it probably just will be the Acclaimed again, but I think it's worth reminding people that something big like this can happen on weekly TV.
Yep, absolutely. All right, well let's pause and introduce the show formally and get on with analysis of the rest of the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, February 8th, 2023, and I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of a variety of podcasts, including this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Tomorrow, Todd Martin, PW Torch VIP analyst from the VIP show The Fix, will be joining me on the flagship. We'll be simulcasting The Fix as the flagship, at least part of The Fix as the flagship this week. Go VIP to hear every week in its entirety, including the someday multi-award-winning mailbag version of The Fix. Someday there'll be awards for that because it's that good. I know it'll happen. And go VIP, everyone, pwtorch.com/go VIP. Tons of perks. You can check out full details at that URL, pwtorch.com/go VIP. The other voice you hear on the show is Kelly Wells. He covers NXT primarily for pwtorch.com, including not only written reports every other week in rotation with Bruce Hazelwood, but also hosting the PWT Talks NXT edition of the PW Torch Daily Cast. Be sure to subscribe to that for free, by the way, just search PW Torch on your podcast app, and you'll see the Daily Cast logo pop up and subscribe to that for free. That also, those shows all are included on our VIP feed, but it's an ad-free, plug-free version of the show, one of the many VIP perks. Kelly, welcome to AEW coverage.
Yeah, second podcast of the day. I got one in the can with Tom for NXT 8 years back. We're talking about a takeover show. So lots of meat there, and haven't jumped into an AEW show with you for a while. I'm not always able, but it was an interesting one to jump into. And weird side note, I think every time you've had me on Dynamite, MJF has wrestled, which is odd because that guy does not wrestle a lot of matches. But I think he's shown up every time.
He just wants to know what you think.
I think of a lot of his act. I don't have a lot of negatives to say. So there you go.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Kelly, you and I are both Wolves fans. I do not know the score of tonight's game. Tonight's game seems less relevant with such a stripped-down lineup. I don't know if you're – are you recording the game or are you following?
I actually am watching it.
Okay, so no yep. Spoilers for me as far as that goes, because that's a good way for me to unwind sometimes late at night. But what do you think of the trade? Like, we got to spend like a minute on this.
Yeah, and I figured we would, unless that you also blacked yourself out on trade news.
I just found out after Dynamite. I was unplugged until I saw information on that. So I actually didn't know until a few minutes, actually when I was logging on to do the show. So I am shocked, and not shocked, but I'm, I don't know, not as shocked as the Guns winning the tag titles, because there was a lot of good reasons to trade D'Angelo Russell, even though he was a fan favorite, maybe among the casuals, Kelly. maybe that's the way to put it. I liked his personality. I sort of liked his leadership some of the time and not other times. Didn't often at all like his defense, but he was fun to watch when he was here, and now he's headed to L.A., right? I know it's like a three-team trade.
Yeah, and he can fill up a stat sheet on occasion, but he has many nights, and in some cases years, where he just doesn't take a lot of smart shots. I don't know why he made himself the center of the offense so often, but he was having his best year this year, and I think as a result we probably got max trade value out of him. So again, slightly different look Wolves. I've always liked Conley. I know he's on the downside of his career.
9 years older than Aunt D'Angelo.
Oh mama. I wouldn't have guessed it was that much.
Yeah.
But I like Mike Conley pretty well. Nikhil Alexander Walker, I don't know as much about. I mean, I know the player, but he's not somebody I've tracked or anything. So interested if we got anything there, but glad that we got something, anything for D'Lo.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to lean on the experts who follow the Wolves closer, or follow basketball and the nuances of it. I'm more than a casual fan of the Wolves, but I'm not like a basketball expert in terms of studying other teams and stuff, but I certainly know Mike Conley's respected, and he can bring some veteran leadership to a locker room that could use it, I guess. And obviously the future of the team is Anthony, and maybe Conley would be a good influence on him. We'll see. I mean, that's part of, I think, what's going on here. And there's a small window with Rudy Gobert, not a small window, but a not the same window as with Ant, to be a great team. And so, you bring in a veteran point guard who can maybe stabilize things. We'll see. Not shocking. I mean, D'Angelo's going to want a big contract, and the Wolves committing to that with wanting to keep other people. I still am wondering if Kat is going to be traded too.
If Conley can be a good influence on Ant, that's great. If he can be a good influence on Cat, he'll be my favorite player.
I know.
Wolf history.
Yeah. Carl Anthony Towns is like, he has the maturity of a mop, a mental maturity of a mop as I can't remember who said that. But it's, yeah, his on-court demeanor is embarrassing and immature and unbecoming, but man, is he talented. And if he could just grow up, I don't know if he ever will. He'd be great too. Cause there are times I'm a big, Karl Anthony Towns fan, but man, there are other times where I do not want to watch him complain to the refs while the other team runs down and scores when he should be back on defense and flailing his arms like an entitled spoiled child constantly. But then there's other times you're like, oh my God, is he good? You know? Yep. So yeah, Conley maybe will help in that regard. Anyway, we probably pushed the limit of people wanting to hear us talk those, but
I would say so.
Laker fans, D'Angelo, at least the Lakers are involved. People are like, well, yeah, we got a little D'Angelo talk there, the guy who's going to play with LeBron now. So anyway, yeah, I'm just learning about it, so I don't know a lot. So give us a call, people. We have a bunch of people called up. Nobody's pushed one yet. So I don't know if people don't have opinions on the show or it just wasn't that shocking of a show or what. But feel free to call, and the line would be short. When you call, push 1. The number to call is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1. That places you on our switchboard so we know you want to be on the show. Unless there's a problem with our switchboard, nobody's done that yet. So, like I said, the wait will be short, and this is a good time to be a first-time caller. We do have a bunch of emails, and one of them I want to get to right away, Kelly, has to do with the Eliminator match. It's simply this. Josh in Florida says, do you have any idea what a championship Eliminator match is? Thanks. And I do, but they've never told us, or if they have, they need to tell us always. Because I think it's a boxing term, and it's just, they just say it like everybody knows what it is. And it's a fancy word for a champion is wrestling a potential challenger in a match where the title is not on the line. And if that challenger doesn't win, then he or she is eliminated from title contention for a while, you know, until they re-earn it. I believe that is the definition, but Kelly, they need to explain that, right? Or do you think I and others are underestimating what percentage of people go, oh, eliminator match. I totally know what that means.
I got it from context also, but further confusing the issue is that occasionally WWE refers to eliminators as single elimination tournaments, as eliminators. So, yeah, if you're going to use a term that walks in from a sport that, just pure numbers-wise, most of your fans don't watch, you've got to make that clearer. Like I said, got it from context. And took away the same exact thing from it that you did. But yes, it's you only need to explain it one time at the beginning of the show. And I think that's enough.
And it is symptomatic of something irritating about AEW, which is playing to the fan who knows everything Tony Khan and Excalibur know and not putting themselves in the place of hardcore fans who just weren't watching New Japan in 2017 or weren't watching PWG a few years ago or don't want no boxing turns. And they just, there's I don't want to go off on it too much because, I mean, there's a lot of good on the show and a lot of good about AEW, but man, they are not empathetic handholders for people who really want to love this product, but also need to have some things explained. And this is, you know, again, it's symptomatic of sort of a not a larger problem, but a lot of little things that I think add up to make the show and the product seem a little less accessible than it ought to be for the fans who they're chasing when they want to grow their audience, the, you know, so-called second million.
Yeah, I don't know about that second million. I think about that every time. We always talk about it when we're on the podcast, and I just I don't know if they're out there, but if they are, you're not going to capture them by trying to be the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah, and they are out there. I mean, there's absolutely – I mean, I'm not saying that if they did everything differently that I have suggested for 3.5 years, that they would have 2 million viewers and be rivaling SmackDown. That's not the point. The point is they've got about 1 million. You know, after 7 days, they usually hit 1 million viewers, even if they don't get them on the same night – on the live or same night total. But – the second million are who they're chasing, and you want to build up to 200,000, 300,000, 400,000 over time. I know there's people are canceling cable, but a lot of people canceling traditional cable are getting streaming services, and they're counted by Nielsen. Nielsen counts whoever's watching, whether it's Sling TV or, you know, Xfinity or whatever. They get counted, and so some of those cable cord cutters are getting counted in other ways, and so it is harder to draw a big audience, and it is wrestling, even AEW, at their numbers with their demos, with their 1849 demo ratings, are coveted and doing great in so many ways. It's not to say they're not, but boy, if they just did a few little things that would have no negative, it could have a positive. And again, limited air challenge, not a big deal, but you don't want people watching and being confused or feeling like, you know, they're left out or not clued in enough to be allowed or welcome at this party. But it was a wild night overall, Kelly, in terms of action. You mentioned MJF opening things up with a good match with Takeshita. You had a short, maybe shortened match with Jamie Hayter and Bunny, but it was, you know, one of Bunny's more acceptable matches until that final move. And then you had a gauntlet match that went by quickly, which was probably smart, although the Starks-Garcia chapter was good. You had Danielson and Roosh with bleeding, perhaps excessive bleeding, by Bryan Danielson. He ended up winning to secure the shot against MJF. You had the Trios tag team title match against Top Flight and AR Fox with just wall-to-wall start-to-finish athleticism and excitement. Not a lot of sustained selling, but that's baked into the Elite style, and fans eat it up. And then the Acclaimed in the tag team title match, which, was fine while it lasted. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't a bad match, but it wasn't about being a good match. Everything was, whatever TV time is left, we're going to wrestle for a little while and then go into the shenanigans and the angle as we kind of finalize the story we're telling. But still, I mean, it was very wrestling dominant. And I think they were kind of flagging that at the beginning by talking about it being, you know, a championship night or, you know, whatever moniker they threw onto the show.
Yeah, it was the fourth longest match on the night. Fifth, if you count Ricky Starks's saga, all as one match or one segment. So indeed, more of an angle than a match. But I take down match times because I have to, and I did take note that that it was one of the shorter matches on the show. And then, of course, Jamie Hayter and the Bunny was only 6:08, and three of those were on during a commercial break. But yeah, that ending segment was too bad. Whenever I see the Bunny, I cannot unhear you saying, okay, what I think of as the Bunny is somebody who's doing an impression of being a professional wrestler. And I think that every single time I watch her.
No, making fun of.
Okay, yes.
She's been better about it lately, and I thought she was fine tonight. But yeah, she comes across as somebody making fun of professional wrestling when she wrestles. But I will say, I mean, I think she's significantly better than when I first made that observation.
Yeah.
But man, if you look at some of her early work in AEW, it really looked, both in terms of her wrestling and her body language and preening for the camera, all of it, it looked like she was mocking professional wrestling. Like if Andy Kaufman back in the day was doing a skit making fun, or as people accuse Shawn Michaels of doing with Hulk Hogan, over bumping, she just looked, so I don't want to pile on because she's gotten much better. Yeah, that's where that comes from. And it's still, you know, there's still aspects of it there. But, man, that bump on that second exploder when either she didn't know what the move was, or they told the way they framed it or tried to cover for it is that she was trying to block it. And I think it was Taz who said sometimes when you try to block something, instead of going with it, you can make it worse. I hope she's okay, but it seemed like maybe the match got stopped prematurely because of that.
Yeah, and I thought that as well, just because they came back from commercial, and then it was very, very brief before they went to the finish. So
yeah,
I don't know if that was truncated, if they're just, you know, being cautious because they knew it wasn't going to be that Hayter was going to win a fairly straightforward match anyway. So, yeah, all our best to the Bunny, I guess, there.
Yeah, yep. Cool. All right, we'll go to JB from Detroit, who said, I really liked it during the MJF Takeshita match when Excalibur asked Taz, do you really want your champion cutting corners at every turn like MJF? And Taz just kind of danced around the question. In my opinion, this is a strong stance and integrity that your main face commentator should be taking. And your proverbial heel commentator in Taz was more or less left speechless or hemming and hawing. I noticed that. I made note of it. I liked it. I can critique the lack of explanation for what an eliminator match is, because I think they're trying to be cute about it and not just say non-title. But it has other, if it has other ramifications, they should own it and explain it, which is if the challenger, if the contender loses, then they cannot get a title shot for X amount of time. They should just explain it. But good for Excalibur, and part of getting heat on a heel is shaming them for disgracing the integrity that should come along with victories. I believe in my heart that is, I won't say a non-negotiable, but I think almost always a better approach to take when framing how you present pro wrestling on television if you're trying to reach more than a niche audience. And that is not to say everybody has to be, you know, super black and white, goody two-shoe baby faces and snarling, growling, cheating heels. You can have some nuance with the characters, but the way they wrestle should be something that you wouldn't want to watch your kids doing to achieve success in high school sports. And I know pro wrestling is different. It's adult, it's pro wrestling, but that kind of integrity of how you win is something that a heel should get booed for not adhering to, and you need to have everybody on board for it. And that means, in this case, Excalibur, as JB points out, pointing out that MJF is a disgrace to the championship because of how he conducts his business during matches. He also complimented MJF and said, this guy's a scumbag, but man, bell to bell, he's really good. You want to also throw that out there too. That's part of MJF's act, is he's not honky-tonk man. You know, he is a really, really good athlete. He is tough. But he likes to take that shortcut in part because his personality has no shame and doesn't care what people think. Because as he explicitly said in his promo later, the history books don't note the winners who cheated versus the winners who didn't. They just mark you down as a winner. Kelly, your thoughts on JB's comments and mine also.
Yeah, I'm old enough that you know I agree. I certainly – there's a whole generation – of especially WWE-only fans who don't know what it's like to have an announcer be fully – to always have a conscience, to always have it, to not qualify it by saying, if you cut corners, you can win a match. It seems like they understand the benefit of somebody who's always a heel, but they have their baby faces cut off their heat at the knees constantly by saying, but he won and it really is all about winning. And I just, that always drives me crazy that they go almost all the way to have that conscience. And it's not rocket science. I mean, after Hogan turns, Schiavone says, you can go straight to hell. It's not rocket science. Just watch some, either Monsoon and Ventura or Monsoon and Heenan. And that's how I wish it was still done. And maybe I'm a relic, but I like that. And I do think that Excalibur is one of the better ones in the business at that. I think Kevin Kelly is probably the best right now at constantly staying in a babyface context. But yes, I can't agree more with that sentiment.
How does Vic Joseph do, do you think?
Vic just always seems kind of lost. He mispronounces things. As far as staying babyface, he's better than the main roster play-by-play babyface guys in general. He's just sometimes doesn't seem like he totally knows what's going on or what a move is called. He said Panama City Sunrise for the Panama Sunrise way more times than he got it right.
Shawn Michaels or whoever should be in his ear going, no.
Yep. Io Shirai had a great pun. Her finisher was called Over the Moonsault. He called it Moon Over Moonsault.
Oh, God.
At least 8 or 10 weeks in a row.
No. Yeah.
It's just he's... There are things I like about Vic, but I will never like Vic because of all the mistakes.
Yeah, yeah. All right, JB continues. I really think they're going too heavy with Saraya and Toni Storm being AEW outsiders. It feels like they're hitting us over the head with it, and it went from 0 to 100 in a very short period of time, too short for my taste. I'm going to disagree with JB on this because I think they were accelerating rather slowly into it even before they decided to do it, because Saraya came off unintentionally arrogant about, kind of like Christian did when he showed up. You know, hey, everyone, I walk down the hallway, everyone looks at me like, hey, here, finally, someone who's been there and done that and can give us advice. It's like, well, maybe they were thinking that, but, you know, a real leader doesn't point it out like you just did. And that's also overstating a little bit, you know, who you are in this business and how people probably look at you. Just a little. I mean, but nevertheless, Saraya came in and it was amplified. She was acting like she was Becky Lynch showing up or Charlotte showing up, and it's like she just wasn't at that level. And it was like everyone here is just waiting for her to give them her approval. And it just was off-putting. But it wasn't intentional at that point, I don't believe. I sincerely don't believe that. And they just decided to go with it, which I think is a good thing. But to me, it doesn't seem sudden. It actually feels as if that was the natural course from the beginning. I'm fine with it. I mean, I think Toni Storm's turn feels a little more sudden. I wouldn't say hitting us over the head with it, but yeah, that was more sudden without there wasn't really a sense of, oh, I saw this coming. With Saraya, there was. With Toni, there really wasn't. Kelly, your thoughts on Saraya tonight? And man, that baby girl thing, I mean, she is leaning hard into that, but at least now it's to get boos because, man, is that unbearable, obnoxious, insufferable how often she goes to that phrase.
Yeah, I think that this was a pretty smart audible here, perhaps unavoidable, but yes, at least they did it. It's amazing how often this has happened in NXT the last couple of years. I will make these comparisons, listeners, because I have seen every episode. I do cover it, but they've had these baby faces either challenging for championships or carting around their championships and just being snotty and owning the room and they don't have the cachet to get away with that. So I think that it's an organic enough way to turn Saraya that you could almost claim that it was the plan all along and some people would believe you. with Toni, I mean, I saw her whole NXT run and her NXT UK run. Her whole career is kind of about nobody really knowing who or what she is, and she kind of turns face and heel on a whim. And there's a whole lot of stuff going on with her gear, and it seems like she has an attitude, but you kind of really still don't know who she is. For me, she's never crossed over into being super interesting, and I keep hoping that will happen with every new story beat in her career. we'll see if Saraya takes her somewhere.
Yeah. The spray painting the L, and what was the last time Leva Bates was on Dynamite? I mean, my God, like it's another thing. Like, you have to remind people who she is. I mean, she's appeared on Dynamite 3 times in 3.5 years. Like, I mean, the assumed knowledge of your Dynamite audience compared to the actual viewership of the B content and the secondary shows, it's astounding sometimes. I just don't think that quality control for the you know, beyond the 500,000 core people who watch Rampage, and even fewer who watch Dark, and even fewer who were watching New Japan back when the reputations were made of some of the top people, continues to baffle me. Still enough good going on at AEW that I think, you know, people aren't like, well, I'm not going to watch because I don't know who Leva Bates is or whatever, you know, but again, it's kind of like the straighten your time moment. Just do the, you know, those little things add up and, you know, do them because it's easy. There's no downside and it seems kind of obvious you ought to, but yeah. Okay. JB adds, was MJF's interview promo after the match based on the lyrics of the song Last Kiss, originally sung by Wayne Cochran, but made famous by Pearl Jam, because it really seems like it was, LOL. I do not know. Kelly, do you?
Sorry, my daughter needed her Fitbit charger. Pearl Jam did a theme, for somebody?
No, it was MJF's interview promo after the match based on the lyrics in the song Last Kiss, originally sung by Wayne Cochran, but made famous by Pearl Jam.
Oh. Well, I mean, he certainly took it to a place that that Wayne Cochran and Pearl Jam didn't. That didn't occur to me, even though I know that song very well. I was amused by it. It's just like a hugely overwrought story that is clearly the heel just lying. This was basically Heath Ledger's Joker without saying why so serious at the end. I dug this quite a bit. I guess I didn't think that he based this on Last Kiss, but inspiration comes from everywhere.
Yeah. So did MJF story? Did his date survive or not? Or don't we know?
He said lifeless body.
Okay. So
I moved her lifeless body into the driver's side. So he just went up. He straight up said, I may have been involved in a felony.
yes. But, you know, statute of limitations, you know, on right. that kind of thing, it's, you know, only 6 months, right? No, it's not. I think you're still. but the lyrics are, so we were out on a date in my daddy's car. We hadn't driven very far. There on the road, straight ahead, the car was stalled. The engine was dead. I couldn't stop, so I swerved to the right. I'll never forget the sound that night, the scream of tires, the busting glass, the painful scream that I heard last. The Lord took her away from me. She's gone to heaven. So, I mean, definitely some parallels there. My hunch is it's intentional, not coincidental, but I would not rule out coincidental either. I could see that. And, you know, switching places in the car seat, I don't think it's part of the lyrics. So at least, you know, if nothing else, he added that, I believe.
Yes. He could have done leader of the pack also, but then it would have to end with him dying. So so I guess Last Kiss is more likely, but wherever he got it, I'm glad that he got it, because it was just such a bizarre scene, and I ate up all of it.
How do you feel about MJF as AEW champion? You know, we got to see him tonight cut a promo, a different setting for him, you know, post-match, sitting down in locker room, calls the interviewer Alexi sweetheart, which is, you know, always a heel move to, you know, use it. I mean, it's not 1950. And then, you know, cuts that promo of just the most, you know, kind of cowardly thing you can do. And it's, you know, rather sexually more than suggestive, short of explicit, well, pretty explicit. Just, you know, a pretty evil story, evil conduct on his part. And so you've got that, but you also had the match. And, I mean, he is muscled up and trimmed down. He's got a sleeker haircut now, you know, shaved on the sides a little bit more. You know, when he takes off the robe, you know, or his jacket, you know that he knows that he is way more cut and muscular now than he once was. I think he looked fine before as a champion. You know, I don't think he needed to add the trapezius musculature and the more narrow waist to look like a champion, but you know, neither here nor there, it is a change in look for him. And the, you know, Takeshita's a credible challenger, but not someone who wins a lot. So, you know, but beating him still feels like it means something, cause he's just so good. And you know, it was a 14-minute showcase for both guys, but ultimately, you know, a clean win for MJF. So just, using tonight as kind of the latest ingredients, in your opinion, what do you think of MJF as AEW champion? Does it seem like, yeah, he should be the world champion, or does it seem like too soon, or he doesn't quite reach that level? Where are you on that?
I think he's a great champion, and let's talk about the second million. I think if somebody jumps in and they see this guy as champion, that gives them something to root against immediately. I just think that he brings a lot as champ because of what he can say, what he can do, and that he can back it up. He's relatively pay to play, where you don't get to see him a lot on TV wrestling, which is one of my favorite things to do with world champ. And he seems to confound some of the self-styled hardcore work rate fans who recognize so much what he does as a character that they literally can't see how good he can be in the ring. And they they don't seem to understand they dislike MJF for the right reasons, because MJF is denying them their guy and their kind of wrestler who they think has merit being the champion. I just think that he's made to be a world champion in any company he's in, and to have long reigns and to have it really mean something when somebody finally gets the better of him, because he is an evil genius. I think that he's the best champion available that they have, and that is saying a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, JB says, what do we think Chris Jericho is going to do on the season premiere of Impractical Jokers tomorrow? How will he get Floyd back? Again, this is a little detail on AEW's part, but put a graphic on the screen telling us who these guys are, what time the show is on, and the show logo. Like, Shivani just sort of quickly introduced them, but it's just two guys standing there with a baseball bat talking about something that not everybody's going to know. And it just, I thought it was just, you know, it went 20% of the way it needed to go to actually be effective. And it's just kind of silly. You know, we got his bat. What's he going to do? Everyone just knows this is cross promotion and it's probably pre-taped. You know, whatever happens was taped long before they got the bat. It just, I mean, you know, it happens. You know, we had a match in WWE based on a soft drink, and we had, you know, Fox on SmackDown last Friday, Fox Network, having a NASCAR race, and so WWE did a skit with the Mysterios that sort of undercut the tone of the feud. This stuff happens. But, you know, it's part of being on a cable network and being a good partner. But this, I think they could have done a better job without taking up more time, just sort of making clear what this was all about. But, you know, we're talking about it. It drew some attention to it. It wasn't completely pointless. And I have no idea what Jericho's going to do to get Floyd back. And I do have to say, I don't imagine how I could care less. I think I just don't care at all. And I watch the show. It's funny, but it's just a silly skit. Who cares? Kelly.
Yeah, it you know, it wasn't Chucky. It wasn't RoboCop.
RoboCop. Oh,
and
God.
It took up less time than those things. But I was a little surprised that they gave it as much time as they did and still didn't manage to sell it all that well. To give it that much time, to not have the logo, and to not really even say what time you're supposed to be tuning in. it was a little scattered. I thought that, yeah, let's call it that. I think both guys did what they could in the context of being asked to do this on a wrestling show, which they probably don't watch. And that's just based on numbers. Most people don't watch wrestling. It was odd that they gave it this much time.
Yeah. All right. I think that was that all from JB? Yep, it was. So a couple comments here on the acclaimed Guns, Billy Gunn situation. John from Tennessee said, I really thought Billy Gunn was going to turn tonight. Nice surprise to see they didn't do it, but still put the Guns over. My God, the Guns theme music is awful. Do you all think we get a rematch at the pay-per-view for the tag titles, or does a different team get a shot? It seems like the once great AEW tag division is much weaker now. Thanks for all the great content. Everyone go VIP. David Bryant message said, it's a good storyline, but the Guns winning the titles. I don't know, Og, but the story will be interesting in the build to the pay-per-view. Will Billy go with the acclaimed or support his sons now that they finally, quote, achieved in his eyes? It'd be weird if Billy's like, yay, Colton hit me in the head with a belt. He did what had to be done to become a champion. It doesn't really fit, I don't think, how Billy has been acting with the acclaimed so far. Billy's character has been somebody who seemed to want the acclaimed to win the right way and set, you know, settle the score. I don't want to be at ringside. I want you guys to settle it. I don't want to be involved in the middle of this, influencing things. I wouldn't rule that out, but it doesn't seem to fit the Billy Gunn that has been with the acclaimed in recent months. I guess we kind of combined two comments at once, but the Gunn theme music, is there a chance a different team gets the title shot, and might Billy decide to go with the Suns because they finally made him proud by becoming champs, even if they cheated and hit him with a belt in the process?
I don't mind heels having insufferable theme music. It doesn't need to be, like, I can't even think of it right now, and maybe that's bad, that I can't really, I've got a vague theme coming into my head, but that's about it. But I don't mind them not having Good music. I think that the comments about, I don't know about this, but I'm interested to see where the story goes, demonstrates that it was a good call. So I think that's all positive. If they really, really want to get goofy with this, you could have the Acclaimed knocking at the door in a match about to win. And instead of Billy Gunn helping his sons, Uncle Bart Gunn shows up and I thought that this morning. I was like,
God.
I don't think I'd hate it, even though it would be very, very stupid.
Wow.
Yeah, again, I'll just say I like what they're doing here, and I think in the end we will like the Acclaimed even more than we do now.
Very good. All right. Zach in Texas emailed and said, as a proud Texan and someone whose mother grew up in El Paso, I have to shout out tonight's crowd. They were loud and into everything all night. They did me proud. When it comes to Dynamite, man, they really hit the accelerator on the Danielson-MJF story. MJF and Takeshita had a hell of an opening match. MJF's promo was wild. If you didn't think he was a slime ball before, there's no doubt about it now. Aubrey counting slower each time Max told her to speed up was pitch perfect. I did like that. Danielson continues to prove he's the best wrestler walking the planet Earth right now. His match with Rush was fantastic. The blood splattering the lens was a perfect accident. Now the match is official, and the feud is percolating nicely. I can't believe they actually put the tag belts on the guns, but at least Daddy asked in turn. Hopefully this is a brief run, and this is all rectified at Revolution, which I think is going to be the case. I don't think there's another tag team that they can heat up in the next few weeks to make it work otherwise. But the Acclaimed seem like they should get a rematch, and it should be on pay-per-view. By the way, Kelly, is it too much blood, by the way? Is there too much blood in AEW, and is Danielson bleeding too much? The Takeshita thing with the ring. I think Takeshita handed a blade to the referee while the ref was kneeling to check on him, unless it was Hardway and I just misinterpreted the handoff, but something was added to him that looked small and delicate. How do you feel about blood? And then also just Zach's comments about Danielson being the best wrestler walking planet Earth.
I'm not going to push back on that. I love Bryan Danielson, and always have. I've got some other favorites in New Japan, but I'm not going to bore people with that. I think that Bryan is a perfectly good pick for best wrestler on the planet. I definitely think there's too much blood. I think that it really needs to mean something, and when it happens all the time, it just makes the company look a little bit carny to me. I'm actually fairly extreme on this. I think it's just kind of low rent and low class to have as much blood as they do at times. I would prefer not to see somebody like Daniel, especially throwing caution to the wind, but that is a guy you can't tell to slow down. He's going to do those scary looking headbutt shots from Roosh. He's going to take him to prove that he can. So what can you say? I like wrestling and blood in wrestling a lot when it is used extremely sparingly, but I feel like Moxley's last year or so kind of just desensitized me and probably a lot of people to it. I think there's entirely too much because of that. And if you're going to do it in a really big spot, a really big moment. I don't know if this Roosh match was it. I feel like once they were 10 minutes into this 15-minute match, maybe they had earned it, but I thought it happened way too early. And a Crimson Mask that is not on pay-per-view just seems, I don't know, seems like something you should have saved for a bigger spot. But I don't know. I just think a lot of blood in wrestling is silly.
What do you think of the build for Danielson MJF and this being the final challenge and MJF thinking he, like locking Danielson in the locker room and trying to get the count out, and they played that for, I wouldn't say comedy, but it still was, I guess, amusing that Aubrey was slowing down her count when MJF told her to speed up. I mean, I guess it was playing for comedy a bit. But the tone was MJF desperate to not let Bryan succeed, but Bryan did. Do you like this story, and do you like the hype in general in the matchup?
I do. I'm interested to see this Styles clash come to be, because MJF is somebody who, well, Brian has said a few times that he's not there to be a champion. He's there to help people get over. He wants to have a good run. He wants to have good matches, but he's not there to be a champion. Now, he's as willing to work people as much as anyone. But if you take him at face value, then you just assume that MJF will continue as champion here. As far as the story they're telling, I think that it's old school, straightforward stuff with MJF just trying to duck him and Danielson really having to continue to prove himself over and over, even though we all know he's that good. But MJF just being the chicken shit heel he is. It worked for me. As straightforward as it was, as classic and overdone as some of this is, I'm interested to see it. And it's because these guys are both bringing the best versions of their characters forward to the table.
Yeah. Talk about the Trios title match and the style in the ring, which is just go, 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 foot to the pedal. Lots of near falls, not a lot of long-term selling, a lot of pins being broken up, sometimes very sloppily. One of my pet peeves is when a pin is broken up, but the wrestler who is executing the pin is still on top of the wrestler whose shoulders were down. And even after the, quote, save, their shoulders are still down, and the wrestler's still on top, and the ref just stops his count because some guy jumped in and hit a guy in the back. Like, I hate that. The save should deliberately yank somebody off the top of the person getting pinned so the person getting pinned can lift their shoulder. And when you don't do that, it drives me more nuts than maybe it ought to, maybe not. And we had that in this match. Actually, subsequently, I think it was Nick who kicked out when I think Kenny was late on a save. And that's what you got to do, too. If the save is late, lift your damn shoulder anyway. But again, that's more than nitpicking. The crowd eats it up. The athleticism was dazzling. AR Fox really shined in this one. Dante and Darius, we know what they can do. Obviously, the Bucks and Kenny are good. Kenny's looking really sharp right now. I mean, that's them painting their on their canvas the way they like to paint. There's not a lot of promos and buildup within the show. They just want to come out, do their entrance, and do spots. That's what they want to do. And that's what we get. And they don't seem to have confidence or interest in, building up their matches and framing them with promos. And tonight was no exception to that, even though there was a bit of a backstory coming in. Just your thoughts on any of those talking points regarding the Trios title match, Kelly.
Oh boy, do I love Dante Martin. I've been cheering for that guy since I was watching him live under a mask when he was 17 years old here locally. I just, his joy for what he does is palpable and infectious, and I just love the guy. That out of the way, yes, this was a match that it's basically just work rate porn, and that's great, but what could you do with those 15 minutes to promote other things if you weren't just throwing on a match like this? This seems like, okay, so there are Trios championships in New Japan. You will forget that for large stretches because they have, on occasion, have them defended for 8 months. I'm not exaggerating. There was one time where 8 months went by, there was no defense. But when they do these matches, they typically are on house shows, and they'll be house show main events and things like that. But they are primarily just there to give some weight to a show that otherwise doesn't technically have any. And I say house shows, they televise all their shows, and I watch all of them, no matter how small and meaningless they are. And that's where you usually see these six-man championships run. So no complaints with how much this popped the crowd. And it is really fun to hear a crowd like this. He's dead on about this El Paso crowd. Texas fans not known for being reserved. So yes, pretty common stuff there, but they were really, really into this show. So no complaints with how the crowd reacted to it, but that's a lot of minutes where you've got the ability to do some hard sell and you're taking it up with a good match, but one that is kind of apropos of nothing.
From the mic work you've seen from Kenny and the Bucks, do you think that they're underselling themselves? Is that the right word, the right term? Are they selling themselves short in not taking advantage of something that they're not all that bad at? Or do you think sometimes maybe they're better off letting their talking happen in the ring with the moves that they do? Like, where are you in terms of the character building? Because they have no characters. I mean, Kenny Omega's not a character. The Bucks are not a character. Don Callis is this scumbag who hangs out with them, and nobody talks about why we should root for anyone who he's affiliated with. Nakazawa and Cutler are jokes, and the Bucks treat Brandon terribly. But we cheer them because they're EVPs, and they stood up to Punk. Well, that can make them heels in some people's eyes, not babyface in others. And because they are, you know, because of their backgrounds and what they were able to do as they did tonight again, but they don't have characters. Are they like not confident that, should they be more confident in their ability to actually cut promos and build personalities from what you've seen?
I don't think Kenny should be that confident. The most I've ever seen him on the mic was, the hardest sell I ever did, that he ever did, was going up to a Wrestle Kingdom match with, I think it was Tanahashi. It was either Tanahashi or Okada, one of the usual suspects on top of that company. And Kenny was more or less playing the foreign heel, but his promos are just very sing-song. He never sounds really like, I'll just say, a real person. It just seems like somebody who says, I'm going to be a bad guy. I'm going to perform this like a bad guy. I don't think he's great at it. And if they just want him to be a guy who's in the ring, who does his talking in the ring in his best matches, let him do it. Because, I don't know, there wasn't much build promo-wise for the match that he had with Will Ospreay at this last Wrestle Kingdom. I thought they would give that a little more time than they did on the mic or at shows. They just didn't decide to do so. But it's not a major strength for Kenny. I feel like the Bucks have some untapped potential in that regard. And I don't know that I ever thought that until that moment where they showed up in the match where Kenny lost his championship, where they went to the ring, did those kind of, not stoic, but those resigned nods and let the match play out with Hangman like it did. And I think that there is maybe a subtlety that they could pull off that they're not doing, that they're not trying to do, because the Bucks are kind of supposed to be spastic. And that's what they expect of themselves. But I would like to see them attempt a different kind of character. I'm just not expecting that to actually come to pass as much as I'd like to see them give it a shot.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to see them give it a shot too. I just don't think that's optional. I think you've got to put thought and time into it. That's part of being a national television star in front of a million people on cable TV if you're a pro wrestler. And that there's a lot of that goes on in AEW and in WWE and in Impact Wrestling. People think about the characters and they present them and they use that to augment what they do in the ring. And the Bucks are one note, yell at Brandon Cutler to cut. And that's it. There's nothing else, I mean, about them lately. So, yeah. And again, Don Callis, you know, it's like, yeah, is he a hanger-on? Is he a leader? Does he serve a purpose? Do you just tolerate him? Do you embrace him? Why would we cheer for him to be happy with anyone's success that he's affiliated with? You can't just ignore that.
And the announcers do. They kind of ignore him. Like, he's there, and I go, oh, I didn't even realize he was there because they didn't bring him up.
Yep. I agree. Okay, so other content on the show, the gauntlet match. This was, you know, cliche alert, short and sweet. You know, Angela Parker lost in about a minute, and Matt Menard lost very quickly with a sudden roll-up. And then we got to Garcia with a swerve that it might be Sammy, but Sammy just ended up being a red herring, a distraction, whatever the right term would be, leading to a brief advantage for Garcia. And then Garcia won, which kept Starks away from, or keeps Starks from getting his hands on Jericho again. What do you think of how they executed that gauntlet? In WWE, a gauntlet match can take 50 minutes. In this case, it was over an 11 with a split-screen commercial break in the middle. Your thoughts?
In a gauntlet match where it's just one babyface trying to run a gauntlet of three matches, if you had told me that there was going to be that but didn't tell me who was in it, I still would have told you how it went. I would have said, okay, babyface beats two extremely low-end guys who can absorb a loss, a quick one, and it doesn't matter. And then he loses the third match by nefarious means to continue the story. I would have said that regardless, because when you have a babyface who's got to win three matches in a row, that's always how it goes. So that said, I really like Ricky Starks. I like that he's getting this shine. And I think that, I don't know. I'm never quite sure with how I feel about how Jericho's being booked at any given time, but he seems up for anything, and that makes it work. So whatever, no real complaints. 100% predictable stuff here, but story beat wise, Jericho showing up, maybe not, but otherwise story beat wise, yes. But yeah, it was fine, and I saw it coming, and it didn't really matter.
Yeah. We got to hear Hook talk tonight, briefly, but I liked it. He said, "Be cautious with those words, sir," after twisting Stokely's arm a little bit. Stokely acting like he needed medical help after his arm got twisted, which is actually kind of believable. You know, somebody who's trained like Hook can probably torque your arm in a way that you would be concerned you had strained a ligament or something. But Stokely's also trying to be a baby. There wasn't a lot of other stuff on this show other than the matches or segments directly related to the matches, like MJF and the Acclaim to Billy Gunn. But this was one little thing they snuck in, and I'm glad that they did. I thought it was a good use of time, and I thought it was one of Stokely's better promos. Wasn't like a great promo or a showcase promo, but I thought it was good. It's like it didn't belabor the point. It didn't seem like super self-centered. It wasn't, you know, it's what I think he should be doing. Selling for a baby face and being two-faced and then being a baby. And I thought Hook looked cool. Bit of a coincidence that he showed up during the promo, but I guess maybe he was hanging out and heard his promos up next and decided to head that way. I can talk myself into that, Kelly.
You know, if they want to make it feel less coincidental, you could have like 15 people pass by before Hook does.
True.
But only one guy shows up and it's Hook. I love Stokely Hathaway in addition to being one of the great Twitter follows in all of wrestling. He's so selfless and giving and knows the role that he plays, will put the baby face over in whatever way he has to do it. And will make himself look as dumb. He's Bobby Heenan for a new generation. If he got the TV time, maybe that's an oversell, but I really, really like Stokely Hathaway.
The other segment we didn't talk about. There was one other segment. What was it? I moved on to next week's lineup. There was one little thing that they did. Oh yeah, the Samoa Joe vignette talking about Darby Allin and the title change. I love that they did this, and I'm glad I remembered to bring this up. They're following up on last week's main event. That's not a strength of AEW, and it didn't take a lot of time, but it was well produced. I think whoever's producing Samoa Joe's segments and how Samoa Joe is portraying himself, how he's talking. It plays to a strength. Not everybody needs to do interviews in the same way. And some people are better in different formats. This is Joe's format. And it worked for him. And I like that he put over Darby a little bit. That he was a worthy opponent and then disparaged his current opponent, Wardlow, in saying he's got secrets, you know, which is like, oh, what's that? Is that going anywhere, or is he just messing with Wardlow's head? But he said he'll expose those secrets and take everything from him. Again, this didn't take a lot of time, but you drop it into a show in between a couple matches, and it says what happened last week's important. We're going to remind you of who the TNT champion is and who came out to confront him last week, so it does, you don't lose sight of it or forget about it, because people lead busy lives and they're watching a lot of wrestling and a lot of sports and a lot of programs. So again, it's a super small thing. It probably breezed by, and most people didn't give a lot of thought to it, but it reminded people of what's happening. It made that title change seem important. It made Samoa Joe seem important, and it built anticipation for Joe Wardlow. That's the kind of thing that I was advocating AEW do more of in their earlier years, and they've been better about it lately, and I think they've been especially good with Joe in that regard. Kelly.
Yeah, and Joe was having a pretty good run doing this sort of thing on NXT towards the end as well. He's just – you'll never hear me say a negative word about Joe on the mic. He's just so good at it that he's the kind of guy you say, all right, here's a cameraman, turn yourself loose and give us what you give us, and you know you can set your watch to it. It was good stuff, of course. There's just a level of menace with him that you can't manufacture, and a coolness level. He just really seems like the guy that, man, you want him in your corner. They don't do a lot of this stuff, and I think they have probably a number of talents who can actually do it, but at least they are recognizing that they have Samoa Joe and he can do this, and you should let him. So I really appreciated the segment as well.
Is there anything else on Dynamite that you may note of or want to comment on or follow up on?
I don't know. On Leva Bates, the last time I saw her was quite a while ago, and that was on NXT 8 years back. The last time I saw her before that was in person with you at the media scrum. So that's how often I think they're showing her. I think we covered every other segment. I would just say it was nice to drop in, and I thought an okay, if predictable show, but I'm interested enough in that Danielson MJF match that I may make the point to get out to the movie theater and check this one out.
Now, I'm not stalling when I ask this question, but we did have Anthony, who attended in person and was going to try to call in, and this is around the time that he thought he might give us an on-site report. So I'm hoping he is able to. But I want to ask this anyway, and I'd like to do this when I have you on. Tell me about the state of NXT compared to AEW right now. Strengths, weaknesses, what they're doing differently, where they could learn from each other, where one could borrow something from the other. You cover NXT for the Torch. That's your main beat. They used to be head-to-head, and we talked a lot more about the two shows in comparison. But they're coming off. NXT is their big event on Saturday in front of a bigger crowd and a big arena. Just talk about the two promotions compared to each other right now.
It's always tough with these two because – I can go ahead and say, hey, NXT, have some more work rate bangers between two of the best wrestlers in the world. And they're like, we don't have two of the best wrestlers in the world. We're developmental. So with that out of the way, I will say that one thing that NXT does pretty well is they tell a lot of stories. It seems like no matter where you are on the card, other than the people who are just enhancing before they are taking their turns, they have something going on. They have something they're fighting for, whether that be – see, AEW kind of makes it all about – they fill it up with belts, so there's always some reason they can say that a match is happening. NXT's only got a few championships, three for the men and two for the women. I guess that's kind of a lot for two – it's more than I'd prefer, but whatever. But they have other ways to add weight, to add meaning to stories. They're telling a lot of stories, and they're still not And they're still getting a lot of in-ring minutes happening there. So you can really have both, which I think sometimes AEW is not aware of. They're good about the work rate minutes, but it seems like they just take some weeks off from telling stories. And I get that you've got three and a half months between shows, so you can afford to do that every now and then. But if you're trying to, if you're on the rise, you have to hook people any way you can. And hooking new wrestling fans with wrestling isn't always the way to do it. It's one of the ways to do it, but they could give more. They're good about their main event storylines. They're not great sometimes about that undercard. So that's part of it. NXT obviously could take a note from AEW's presentation that that makes it seem like it's a big deal. AEW's done that pretty well since the beginning. It's not like WWE doesn't have the resources. It's just whether or not they want to put the money into making it seem like a big deal. I think they are back to a point where they don't want it to outshine the main roster if they can avoid it. They really want to make sure people know it's developmental and people are fighting to get to where there's pyro, to where there's to where there are championships and things like that. So that's where it's tough seeing what NXT lacks that AEW has, because the things that AEW has that NXT doesn't are things that NXT is by definition not supposed to have. I enjoy wildly different things about both shows, and both of them are interesting, and both of them frustrate the hell out of me.
yeah.
But NXT for a couple months, the weekly show has been very good.
It is it's a different time. You know, you said it. I mean, AEW is it's the main roster brand. It's all they have. I mean, I guess there's AEW Dark is sort of their NXT. But NXT's on national cable television 2 hours a week. They run special PLEs on Peacock. It's not nothing. It's not just a YouTube show. It's you know, something they want to make money from and USA Network wants ratings from. But yeah, you can't have a third major league show. You have to, the show needs to have its own identity, and it's different than it was when it was the you know, Paul Levesque, Triple H version that contrasted what Vince McMahon was doing on the main roster. Now that Levesque's in charge of the main roster, it's different, you know, and they're not head-to-head with AEW, and they, you know, completely changed what they're doing from, you know, we're bringing in a lot of former ROH and indie darlings while Vince McMahon does his thing, and we're going to be an alternative, and that whole takeover era was special and great. It's absolutely distinctly different now, but it's not that far behind AEW in terms of total viewers. They're further behind in the key demo numbers percentage-wise, but, you know, it's not a world of difference between the two shows. You know, the high mark for NXT isn't that far off from the low mark of AEW over the course of, you know, 3 months. It's not an unfair or fair comparison. It's just a fact. AEW has a lead, but it's not just always a half a million ahead, you know, or it's not always double the rating. NXT's doing pretty well, but they have that advantage of getting cross-promoted by WWE and having, I was going to say Apollo Crews, but he's not, you know, a difference maker, but, you know, New Day showing up, for instance, a different difference maker, and other guest stars from the main roster, giving a little bit of a boost at times to that product. So, yeah, I mean, we're in a different place than we were 3 years ago, obviously, with the two brands. But NXT has less of an identity, but it's still relevant, and it is a way to see, you know, tomorrow starts today, and be part of the, in a way, be part of the scouting and evaluation process while also being entertained by a largely otherwise self-contained show.
Yeah, it sounds like you just did a commercial for them, so I think you're going to get some emails about being on the take again, but it's absolutely true. It is fun to watch what they're doing now, and they're just doing outside of the Bloodline, of course, they're doing some of the best story, small week-to-week storytelling in all of WWE again. It just seems like they're clicking in a lot of ways, and a lot of the young talents are either falling by the wayside or really starting to figure it out. It really is a decent time to jump in and see what you think.
Okay, I got one more question for you.
Sure.
Which NXT wrestler would you most like to see jump to AEW?
Oh, my. There's a big picture question. Well, what could they use? They could use – I mean, it's easy to say they could use women, but then they get women and they don't use them. So I could say somebody like Tiffany Stratton could really benefit them. It seems like they got more heels than they got baby faces. I could also say somebody like Sol Ruka, who showed up a few months ago on TV, on NXT TV for the first time, was kind of whatever. She was okay, but wasn't maybe ready. So they had her lose her first match that was ostensibly supposed to be a feature for her. And she is getting better at a speed that I haven't really seen from a woman on NXT since Alexa Bliss came in pretty green, but really figured it out after just less than a year. So she is one who I think could inject some life into the real pure babyface side of things, which I think they're kind of lacking with the women there. As far as the men, I don't see as many natural fits in what AEW wants. I see a couple of, I don't know, like a mid card gatekeeper heel, like a Tony D'Angelo, could probably do them some good as far as a brute for them to overcome on the way up. I don't know that I see a high-performing AEW star on the men's side in the short term right now. Certainly, Carmelo Hayes could go there and make a killing.
But, oh, yeah, yeah.
But he would be – he'd be the only one. And I guess I've been waiting for the moment he gets called up to the main roster for so long, it almost feels cruel of me to say, oh, yeah, he should jump to AEW right now.
Yeah, yeah. Wesley impressed me on Saturday.
Yes, he's had a pretty good run here. And with all the weirdness that happened with Zach Wentz, what were they calling him? Something else. His partner. With all the weird things that happened there, it kind of has worked out for Wes because they backed him off from being like, haha, isn't it funny that that this guy gets stoned and you know about it, which is really just not – I don't know why wrestling goes to that all that often, because relatable, sure. But I don't know why that's supposed to make him worthy of being cheered. I really think WWE does big versus small probably better than just about anybody. I think they're really, really good at those type of matches. It was a lot of fun seeing him against Dijak and figuring out how to win that match.
Darby Joe last week, just like that you know, guy crank movement, younger, smaller against a guy who can, I wouldn't say keep up with, but be in the right place at the right time and hit some power moves and sell when needed in the case of Dijak.
Yeah, if you were following the weekly show and knew what Dijak had coming down the pipe, you would know that Wes Lee was going to beat him. But then when they get in the ring and you see the size difference and everything, it's like, okay, I'll forget what I know, taking my Booker hat off.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense that Wes Lee could get out of this alive. And then on this week's NXT weekly show, they did a kind of a nice brief backstage segment about Wesley, just his life, his wife, his family, his dreams, his goals. It was, you know, they used to do that a lot more, and I thought it was really effective in getting guys over to the next level in ways that they weren't yet. So it is really nice to see that they didn't just kind of quietly job him out and then turf him out after he lost his partner. I think he's got real staying power here as maybe a Ricochet type or something like that, who can perhaps bring more to the table from a talking standpoint.
I would go with Roxanne Perez as my first draft if I had access to pluck someone from the roster. And I might take Grayson Waller to work with Ethan Page in a tag team. I think those two playing off each other could be fun.
I almost said Waller. And yeah. I think that he'd fit there too similar to MJF in a way. You can say that about guys, about heel provocateurs. But I think that he could fit there. Roxanne Perez, definitely pure babyface. So you could bring her in. She's a work in progress on the mic, but AEW's women's division is almost entirely made up of works in progress on the mic.
Yes. All right. Cool. We did not hear from Anthony in time. The Rampage tapings might just be running along, but we are in a good spot. Anything else you want to add about the Timberwolves before we sign off here? Now that it's at the end of the show and people can, you know, tune out or fast forward if they want. As far as the type of season that they're having after the big trade.
They're having the same season every team in the league is having.
They're
within two games of 500. They got holes. They lose matches, games they shouldn't. They win matches, games they shouldn't. Sorry, I've been watching wrestling all day.
Yes.
So it's...
They're two games out of the second seed and two games out of not being in the playoffs. Like every team in the West. I don't know about the East, but yeah.
Four bad teams in the entire league. That is it in a 30-team league. Exciting stuff tonight. I will say only that it is incredibly high scoring, and one guy had his first 30-point game. So there, you got that to look forward to.
Yeah. Well, it's better than what happened last night where it's a run. Like, was it like 25, it was like 14 straight points, but it was like 28-2, like in a run.
You could tell me it was 70-0, and that would feel right for how bad. Like, you just have to laugh at that point.
But then then the next time I like paid attention, I looked up for my phone, it was like a 18-point or 20-point game. I'm like, and there's like more than half the game left. I'm like, they could still pull this off. But then it was like 40 points in a blink. So.
Yeah.
It's a weird season. It's a weird season for a lot of teams right now. And I don't know that this trade shakes things up. I guess D'Angelo could help the Lakers. The Jazz just, you know, had a glut of, you know, lots of just solid players who need time. So Vanderbilt would be in a better spot. I'm seeing the people listening on our caller switchboard just drop off. And I don't blame them, but it's, you know, why not? We'll wrap up there, Kelly. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Always fun having you on.
Yes, fun to be here to talk Timberwolves basketball and, time permitting, AEW.
Yes, exactly. Thanks, everybody. Hey, if you're listening to our show on delay, which most of you do, call in live. Let's hear from some new voices, especially since this might be the first time we had no one want to participate in the conversation on the show live. So that is a call to action for everybody out there. So come through next week. We'll talk to you then.